We'll convene the Thursday, May 2nd, 2013 session of the House Ag and Natural Resources Committee. We're in session. Good morning to everyone. A few minutes late, I apologize. I was testifying in another committee. We're going to begin our agenda this morning with Senate Bill 199A. I'm going to open a public hearing on that bill. And Beth, could you tell us a little bit about that bill?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 199A would make some changes to the statute that permits the leasing of water rights for in-stream use. It would also extend the sunset date on the provisions of law that allow split-season leasing of water rights. There is no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact.
Okay, very good. I'd like to call up, please, Phil Ward and anyone else who's joining you. Good morning, gentlemen.
Mr. Chair and members, Phil Ward with the Department of Water Resources, and I've asked Tom Paul, our Deputy Director, to join me this morning in case there are some technical questions related to this bill that he could be helpful with. Mr. Chair and members, this 199A has come to you from the Senate, and it is a department-initiated bill. The purpose of this bill is to extend the sunset or to continue a long-standing program known as the department's split-season in-stream leasing program. So this is a small part of the department's portfolio, but this particular program, and this particular program is a subset of the broader in-stream water leasing program where folks can lease water in-stream for beneficial use, for fish habitat largely, and some other purposes. So this program, Mr. Chair and members, is a subset of that, and the subset is this allows a landowner to lease water in stream for a portion of the irrigation season, and but to use it beneficially on a crop for another portion of that season. And so let me give you an example, if I could, to help with this perhaps. So let's say Representative Krieger has a piece of hay ground that he wants to take an early cutting of hay off of, and he has a water right on that hay ground. This program would allow Representative Krieger to utilize that water right on his hay ground for, say, till the 1st of July to get a first cutting or maybe two cuttings of hay off that ground, and then lease that water in stream the rest of the irrigation season at a time, let's say, that's particularly critical for fish in the stream that he's taking water from, and not utilize it on his hay crop anymore. So it would give him the opportunity for the first part of the irrigation season to use that water right to produce a crop. The second half of that irrigation season, he would lease that in stream for the benefit of the fish population in that particular stream, if this were the case. That's how this program works. It splits the season for that water use and allows half of the time it to be used out of stream, half the time in stream. This, as I mentioned earlier, members, this is a small program. There have been about 17 leases statewide, so it's not heavily used. 12 different operations are involved in those 17 uses. The majority of those are in the Deschutes Basin, but there have been some, a couple in the Rogue, a couple in the Willamette Basin, and a couple in the Hood River Basin. Again, this is a program that's been in place since 2001. It went through a legislative review in 2007. The sunset was extended until the current date. And now this bill, in its original form, proposed to remove the sunset. But as a result of negotiations on the Senate side, that sunset in the form of the bill that you have before you this morning was extended to 2024. Couple other just quickly key points, and then I'll be done. We'll be happy to respond to any questions. There were concerns raised that there could be the possibility of injury to other water rights with this program. And so this bill, as amended, as it's come to you from the Senate, specifically calls out the department's requirements to protect against injury to other water rights that were in rule. It calls those out and places them in statute in this version of the bill. So that's, I think, that was a key amendment on the Senate side and an important piece. So, again, this is something the department has done with this program since its inception, but now that language will appear in statute if you enact this bill as amendment, as amended. The other thing I think it's important to note, there never has been an assertion of injury from any party related to this program. But we have that caution now in this bill. It also pulled a couple other things in from rule. It limited the leases, limits the leases to 5 years. That was in rule. That in this version of the bill now would be in statute. Members, this bill passed the session with the Senate without a dissenting vote. With that, Mr. Chair, the department recommends your careful consideration of this piece of legislation, and we'd be happy to respond to any questions.
Thank you very much. Tom, are you going
to... Mr. Chair, thank you. No, for the record, Tom Paul, Water Resources Department, and I don't have any additional comments, but would be happy to respond to questions.
All right, fine. Thank you very much. Yes, Representative Krieger.
You said there were 17 leases. Can you talk about the acre feet of water that was in those, and how is that, when they lease that water back, do they get a dollar value from somebody for that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Krieger, so I'm just checking my notes here real quick, but to answer the second part of your question, there is quite often, as they lease these things in stream, they're working with a conservation group that has identified that stream as important for fish habitat, and that they may be compensated. The department does not is not involved with those transactions. That's between the landowner and whoever they're working with, but that often does occur. And so the note I have here, 17 individual split stream leases, 12 operations total, and average in stream, average amount of water per lease put in stream, 3.7 cubic feet per second. So not a giant amount of water, but it can be a significant amount of water in specific streams. Yes, sir.
Please.
You mentioned my hay field. That water with the new medical marijuana, could it be applied to that?
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure I'm qualified to answer that question.
Anyone else? Vice Chair Esquivel.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I see that we have a 10-year when we went 6-6. Tell me why we went to 10.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Vice Chair, so the 10-year sunset, as I noted earlier, the department did not recommend a sunset at all at this
right,
point.
Right, I understand that. I mean, how do we arrive at 10 forward instead of 6 like we've done in the past?
Representative, that was a very carefully negotiated item on the Senate side. And so there was a very deliberate negotiation where that 10-year was arrived at. Tom might be able to enlarge on that a little more, but again, I think the sense is that this program has had the opportunity to have reviews already, and that we didn't need to do something as quickly as 6 years this time.
Please.
Would it have anything to do with the length of the leases or something? I mean, does that come into play or something here? Because I just don't understand how we got 10 years all of a sudden.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Vice Chair, Tom Paul. Again, it was a negotiated period of time. The leases are maximum term is 5 years per lease, and they are renewable. So that would cover two lease cycles, 10 years.
Thank you. Anyone else? Go ahead.
You mentioned it's negotiated. In order to have a negotiation, you have to have two people on two sides. Tell us who they are.
Well, there may have, Mr. Chair, Representative, there may have been more than than two parties in this negotiation. But certainly, the department was engaged. The folks from the conservation community that are interested in this legislation were engaged. The vice chair of the Senate committee was deeply engaged in these negotiations. Tom, anybody else that we should?
Richard
Costa-San was very much engaged in these negotiations as well.
Okay. Wouldn't it make more sense to have a 5-year lease if these leases are actually a duration of 5 years instead of a 10-year sunset on it? That way you could do one at a time.
Mr. Chair, Representative, a 5-year sunset,
mm-hmm.
you're referring
yeah.
to?
Mm-hmm.
So the leases are 5-year in duration. I think there was some concern that there has been a historic concern, and some of the folks that I think that would like to testify following us could better articulate this, but there's been a historic concern that folks have been less willing to sign up for this program because of the sunset issue, and that extending the sunset, making a longer sunset, allowed folks to plan better for their operations. Tom, is that fairly said?
Vice Chair Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, again. But is that a bad thing that people don't sign up for?
Well, Mr. Chair, Mr. Vice Chair, I certainly think some folks would view that as a limitation, a needless limitation on the program. I'm not sure I can assign the value judgment to it, but simply that it is a hindrance to some folks participating, as I understand.
Representative Woodson.
I was wondering if you could describe some of the groups that are involved in leasing this, if you would. Are they non-governmental organizations, NGOs? Are they nonprofits? Are they conservation? Could you name them, please? Thanks.
Mr. Chair, Representative, happy to do that. Again, working from my notes here. So the folks that are on my note list as who are the partners with the private individuals in leasing this water and stream, Freshwater Trust, the Deschutes River Conservancy, the Freshwater Trust. So those are the entities that I have at least on my list today identified with a specific lease.
So could we assume that then they are the ones negotiating, that Freshwater Trust primarily, if they're on the list, that those two groups would be the ones who want this extension, the sunset, to go 10 years?
Mr. Chair, Representative, certainly the Freshwater Trust has been deeply engaged in this bill from the outset. So, yes, they were certainly a part of the negotiation process.
I want to make clear, for the record, your example, Phil. First of all, it's my understanding this is entirely voluntary program. And secondly, that the owner of the water right would be able to make the decision of when he or she exercised the opportunities under this bill. So it's not that it's set in statute that it has to be the third cutting or whatever, but rather that's simply an example that you provided us.
Mr. Chair, that's correct, and that's an excellent clarification. That this, and I think I neglected to emphasize that this is an entirely voluntary program. That no one is required to participate in this. And again, all those type of, that was just an example for that purpose only.
Thank you. And you've been hearing a lot about the time frame that's under consideration for extending the program and the potential review by the legislature. And I suspect the reason that you're hearing this this morning is because the other members of the committee have been lobbied as heavily as I have here in the past 24 hours to shorten up the time frame from what is proposed in the bill 10 years to something probably in the neighborhood of 6 years plus or minus. And I'm wondering from your perspective Given what appears to be the popularity of a shorter time frame among the committee here, whether you would see that as some kind of unworkable hindrance to the program were that to happen.
So, Mr. Chair, just I think the department's view was, and as we brought the original bill, is that this has already had a couple test periods, this program, and that the program has proven to work effectively. So, again, it's the department's view that a sunset is not strictly necessary. We think there's enough history relative to move this program forward. One of the things, again, that I think folks that might come behind us could articulate better is that the concern that a shorter time frame on the sunset becomes a hindrance to folks participating in the program. And so for that reason, I think the department's more comfortable with the 10-year sunset. But additionally, we were part of a negotiation on the Senate side where that figure was arrived at, and we want to be faithful to our commitments there as well, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Representative Unger.
Thank you, Chair. This isn't a question. It's more just a comment. You kind of categorized the concern about a shorter sunset as a committee concern, and I don't have a concern about needing a shorter sunset. And in fact, if we were going to do anything, I would rather lift the sunset altogether.
Thank you for that clarification. Any Representative Reardon?
What he said. I'm using Representative Krieger's our example. I mean, this gives a chance for him to get more income off of his property, his assets, and I certainly support that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Additional questions or comments? Not seeing any. Gentlemen, thank you very, very much. Next, I'd like to call up, please, Angela Crowley-Cook and David Pills. Good morning to each of you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Angela Crowley-Cook, the Legislative Director of Oregon Environmental Council. And Mr. Chair, with your permission, I'd like to testify and run. I had to double book myself this morning.
I understand.
Thank you.
I know how that goes.
Thank you. So, members of the committee, Oregon Environmental Council supports SB 199 and the extension of the sunset by 10 years. And we do so in collaboration with many members of the user community. Essentially, this is a successful program. It's worked well for a decade plus. And it seems to me that the folks who are using this program successfully should not be punished with the uncertainty of its continuing into the future. It's a great flexible tool that users can participate in only if they want to, since it's a voluntary program. So I'll just keep it short. We support the program. It's a great tool for Oregon water users.
Great. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Chair Witt, members of the committee. For the record, my name is David Pills. I am the Flow Restoration Director at the Freshwater Trust. Before I get into the specifics of the bill, I might just introduce the Freshwater Trust a little bit for some of you that don't know us. We are a very different sort of conservation organization from ones you may be more used to seeing here. Being in Salem is not our expertise. We are most comfortable working with private landowners across Oregon to find voluntary and incentive-based ways to manage their operations in a way that allows them to coexist with the realities that they face in terms of their responsibilities for habitat and environmental needs. But we do this in a way that's extremely mindful, and we really value agriculture's benefit to this state. I tend to measure progress in numbers of cups of coffee with someone at their breakfast table. I spend a lot of time with landowners. I grew up in a ranching family myself in Colorado, so this work is very important to me, not only from the perspective of conservation, but also from the perspective of wanting to maintain a viable agricultural business and a viable agricultural community in this state. We've been very engaged in Senate Bill 199 because we believe it is probably the best tool that Oregon has at its disposal to go about facing this incredibly, incredibly difficult challenge of balancing the importance of using water for productivity and maintaining some water and stream to support one of Oregon's other most treasured assets, which are our fish populations. The split season in-stream leasing program, as you've heard, is an incredibly flexible tool. I'd like to put a few more numbers on what Director Ward told you. We've done a few of these split season leases out in Grant and Union counties, and actually looked at the productivity numbers of the landowners that do these. In a real generalized sense, an acre foot of water applied to a hay field, now in May and June and early July, grows a lot of hay, grows 2,400 pounds per acre of hay. That same acre foot of water applied to that same field in late July, August, September, when daily average temperatures are above 70 degrees, grows about 400 pounds of hay. Compare that with the opportunity that a landowner has to work with a group like the Freshwater Trust or a group like the Deschutes River Conservancy, where we can offer them some compensation to voluntarily enter into these agreements. And you look at their bottom line at the end of the year, and a couple of really important things come out. First of all, they haven't stopped being farmers. You know, a lot of these people have gotten to do in Union and Grant County, also in Hood River County, they've gotten two full cuttings of hay. They've gotten, more than two-thirds of the benefit of their operation. What they've sacrificed is their last cutting of hay, which is, as I said, considerably smaller. But what they've been able to do is put that water in stream in a very targeted way. That's the importance of this program. It allows in-stream leasing in a very, very targeted way. I think I'd also highlight something Director Ward said. We've been very careful over the years to protect third parties, other water users. I work very closely with the department's water masters, who are the experts on the ground. They live in these communities. Often they farm in these communities. They know the water rights really well, and when they approve an in-stream lease, they will only do so knowing that the lease will not injure their friends, their neighbors, and other water users. The department also has the ability to unwind or modify these leases. If somebody were to knock on the water master's door and say, hey, look, this lease is really hurting me, the department would have the opportunity to modify it. And finally, the final point I want to make is, I was deeply involved in the negotiations on the Senate side. I want to give a lot of credit to Senator Olson, Vice Chair of the Senate Environment and Natural Resource Committee, for really sort of rolling up his sleeves on this and working with us. And I will address the 10-year versus a shorter sunset issue. Like the department, I was definitely hoping to remove the sunset, but I do understand the reason to have a sunset on a program that has only had 17 successful leases. I think we do have a ways to go to prove up the program a little better. That said, the landowners I work with have always expressed a need to be able to make a little bit longer-term plan. And you'd be amazed with a six-year sunset how all of a sudden, 2 years into it, landowners all of a sudden don't have the ability to make a longer-term plan. Most folks don't think on a four-year or five-year sort of time frame. When they're thinking of a long-term plan, they're thinking, can I get three good rotations in? Can I do three-year rotations of my crop where I, go from hay for 2 years to a grain crop? So the 10-year sunset is a compromise, and I'm that is the business we're all in, and I appreciate that, and we're happy to work on the Senate side for that compromise. I would ask the committee to keep the 10 years in place because I think it's a valuable, gives us a long enough time frame to really prove up the success of this program without sort of cutting us short. With that, I'll end my testimony, and thank you very much. I'm happy to answer questions.
Thank you. Vice Chair McEwen.
Chair Witt, thank you. Two questions. First of all, how would you characterize why there are only 17 users? And is there some sort of a mechanism or a plan in place to encourage more people to take advantage of this opportunity? And second of all, this is just, again, me not understanding the program as well as I might, but when you say in-stream, if you're on an irrigation district, like a Swally or a Sisters irrigation district, does this apply also, or is it actual out-of-stream in the more literal sense?
Chair Witt, Vice Chair McEwen, thank you for the question. Why only 17? I think that's a really great question. Oregon passed its in-stream water rights law in 1987. The Oregon Water Trust was the first water trust in the nation, and it was formed in 1993 to try to put the In-Stream Water Rights Act into action. The Oregon Water Trust merged with another group to become the Freshwater Trust. It's been a progression since 1993 at sort of figuring out how to prove up all of the various tools. This tool was enacted in 2001. One of the requirements of doing a split season lease is that you measure and report your water use. You have to prove that when you shut off, say, your irrigation of a crop in July, that you haven't already used your entire volume of water right. If you have, you don't have anything left over to lease. As you may or may not know, a lot of, especially small diversions on small tributaries out in you know, our most rural parts of the state, don't have measuring devices. And the measurement program has been rolling out slowly, but one of the big stumbling blocks is we haven't had a lot of measuring devices in place. Recently, the Freshwater Trust decided, you know, let's not see that as an obstacle. Let's go out and learn how to put in the measuring devices ourselves, find landowners that are willing to put in the measuring devices, and grow the program that way. In the last couple of years, since 2011, 2010, we made a very concerted effort to do more of these split season leases because, honestly, landowners were asking them for us. They're saying, you know, I'm not interested in leasing my water in stream for the whole season. What else can you offer me? And we've made a concerted effort. And since 2011, you know, we did about four or five new split season leases last year. We have at least that many in the application process here in Salem this year. And I really see the program growing. So we made a very specific effort to grow it. I think before that, you know, we didn't necessarily do that. So I see the next few years as a really big growth period, and that extending the sunset will really help with that. The second question about how this operates on an irrigation district level, a lot of that depends on the management of the district, but it's not necessarily any different. A landowner in the district or the district themselves can enroll some of their water rights in a split season lease. And the district just figures out, you know, they have very complicated, some of them, like Swally, some of the bigger ones you mentioned, have, you know, I don't pretend to know exactly how they figure it out, but they just work it into their overall management.
Okay, we'll follow up.
Please.
How much does it cost to put in the measuring device?
Vice Chair McEwen, it really depends. It depends on the system in place. So in the 15-mile basin where we're doing a lot of these, the Water Resource Department partnered with OEB to actually purchase inline flow meters, which hook onto a pipe and total, you know, totally calculate the amount of water being used. Those can vary depending on the size of the pipe from about $600, $800 to, you know, a couple thousand dollars plus installation. We have also been on a sort of steep learning curve about how do we do this with a rancher who has an earthen ditch, somebody who's not necessarily, you know, pumping from an advanced pump station, but it's just flood irrigating. So in those situations, we're installing some sort of flume or weir and a stage recording device, or just a, you know, the equivalent of a ruler on the side of this known box and calculating the amount from there. And those cost, you know, around, depending on the size, again, between $600 and $1,200.
Thank you.
Yeah.
David, I agree with you that this could
just be an incredible tool, and I hope that it it proliferates. I'm wondering if there are things that you see that perhaps we could do better or differently that would perhaps provide some more education or some assistance in being able to get the measuring devices in stream. What could we do to help ramp up this program?
Chairwitt, thank you. That's a great question. I think that the department is rolling out a measurement strategy across the state. I think it's very important that it continue to be an organic process. I think where we've seen the most success with this program recently is in the 15-mile basin, where all the landowners were able to come together sort of on their own to see the importance of having these measuring devices. The importance, the value that they've found in the measuring devices is they know exactly what they're using, but more importantly, they know exactly that, somebody downstream is not using too much or upstream is not using too much. It provides them a lot of certainty. And then once we have these measurement in places, there's a very old saying, and I can't accredit it to anyone, but, you can't manage what you don't measure. And in water, that's absolutely true. But like anything, I think the reason it's been so successful in the 15-mile basin is because the landowners ask for it. And so I think to the extent that we can continue this program and continue to talk about the benefits of this program, we may be able to, I actually see one of the side benefits of this is it does encourage folks to measure water use that maybe are willing to do it but haven't, had the resources to put it on there yet. So.
In the 15-mile basin, where is that located?
15-mile is a Columbia River tributary that flows off the west side of Mount Hood.
Okay.
And I'm sorry, the east side of Mount Hood, obviously. And it actually dumps into the Columbia River right below the Dalles Dam. There's an ODOT bridge that you drive over right before you hit the dam, and that's 15-mile. And if I might just really quickly... One of the biggest benefits to the 15-mile landowners is they actually had somebody call the NOAA enforcement officer and complain about a fish kill that happened in 2009. And since then, the landowners have really sort of engaged in a cooperative way to head that off. They don't want to end up in a situation where somebody comes in and tells them they have to use less water. They've really engaged in a process that says, "Well, look, what are all the tools out there, like split season leasing, like water measurement, like scientific irrigation scheduling with soil moisture monitoring and things like that? What are all of the things that we can do as a watershed without having to engage with the federal government, without having to engage with the state government?" What can we do to sort of head that off before it comes? And we've had a great relationship with those landowners, and they've it's one of those situations where they're asking for the help, and we're happy to give it.
And I'm also interested too in the efficacy of all of our efforts. I'm sure with some landowners there is an element of goodwill along with the financial incentives, but are there places where we have absolute net financial gains by participating in this program?
Chairwitt, thank you for the question. Yes, absolutely. The amount of compensation we offer landowners is based on what the incremental contribution of that late season water is to their net revenue at the end of the year. But we are always in a position of trying to make landowners whole or better than whole. So like I said, that that 400 pounds of hay that can be grown from that acre foot of water, that acre foot of water costs the same amount in August as it does in June, but it gets you less. So if we're offering compensation or other incentives that do better than that 400 pounds of hay, that's what we're always looking for, and doing it in a way that doesn't sacrifice next year's crop or anything else.
So we have the financial consideration. Can you tell us what improvements we've seen in terms of water volume, say, in 15 Mile Basin?
Sure, Chairwood, thank you. We have a working flow target on 15 Mile of 5 to 7 CFS at the mouth. That's an amount of water that we feel is enough to provide flows that fish need sort of desperately in that late summer season, but it's not so much, you know, we're not looking at having to whack a whole two-thirds of the water use off the stream or something to reach that number. We picked it because we think it's a realistic goal that if enough irrigators are participating, we don't have to make a significant, you know, any significant reduction in productivity for the overall basin. We are, through a combination of split-season leasing and full-season leasing, you know, some folks will fallow a field for a year as part of their rotation as well. It helps the land recover from intense farming. So some people do full-season leases as well. The program we have in 15 Mile between split-season and full-season this year, I think we'll be very close to meeting the bottom end of that 5 CFS flow target.
Very good. I think this just underscores the importance of volunteer efforts and the fact that people are not compelled to do things oftentimes makes them willing to participate. So thank you very, very much for your testimony. Greatly appreciated. Next, I'd like to call up, please, Richard Kosasan. Morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Richard Kosasan on behalf of Water for Life. And not to detract from the underlying program, we have been, I think, very, very consistent in terms of suggesting a shorter sunset on this program. And the reason for that, it provides a quicker review by the legislative body. I think the previous speaker made my point. To date, I believe there have been a total of 17 leases in 12 years, but the testimony prior suggested substantial growth in this program during the future years. And if that is the case, one should carefully consider the potential for injury for other water right holders within a given basin, within a given stream reach. We would support a 6-year sunset. And I think, again, that is simply to bring the program back to the legislative body for a formal review. In terms of the leases, well, I think one should take a look. It is my understanding that the 17 leases entered into to date basically have all been for the duration of a year or two. And I am unaware of any of the existing leases extending for a duration of greater than 2 years. In terms of the 5-year standard, Mr. Chair, 5-year for the duration of a lease, that would comport with the forfeiture statutes. And those statutes suggest that if you do not exercise the beneficial use of your right for a period of 5 years, there's a rebuttable presumption of forfeiture. So I think that is consistent. Looking back at the program, as previously indicated, it started out in 2001. In 2007, it was renewed for a period of 6 years. In terms of long-term protection of other water right owners, I would suggest a shorter duration. With that, I would be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Unger.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Kosasan, were you involved with the discussions on the Senate side about this bill, and were you engaged in the negotiation to take the bill from its current, its original form to a 10-year sunset?
Chair Witt and Representative Unger, indeed I was, and I think I was very, very consistent to suggest a shorter duration on the sunset. I would encourage the committee to take a look at the provisions found in Section 1 of the bill, specifically subsection 1. I think the primary debate here stems from the language found in the last sentence. And the language would read, a person who transfers a water right by purchase, lease, or gift under this subsection shall comply with the requirements for the transfer of a water right under 540-505 to 540-585. Those transfer provisions basically are in place to, one, facilitate a transfer of water in terms of a place of use, type of use, or point of diversion, but they're also in place to make certain that other water right owners are protected. And I think that is the key issue.
There clearly was some work, thank you, Chair, work done on this bill on the Senate side. Was there a work group that got together or a small committee of people who came together to make the decision to revise the bill from a no-sunset bill to a 10-year sunset bill?
Chair Witt and Representative Unger, we indeed, I guess, had an informal work group.
Conclusion of that work group that a 10-year sunset was a reasonable compromise? I mean, this bill passed out of the Senate with no votes, if I understand correctly. So it seems like there was good compromise on the Senate side. And so I wonder, after that compromise, why, if all those people could agree that 10 years was the right year, why 6 years somehow seems to be, what's the difference, and why not work with the rest of the group who all seem to come to a pretty reasonable consensus for 10?
Chair Witt, Representative Unger, I think I was outnumbered. That would be my first issue. Second of issue, I think most people would agree that I've been fairly consistent with a six-year sunset. And it would be helpful to review the discussions concerning House Bill 2983 from 2011. And again, review the discussions pertaining to Senate Bill 1513, dealing with the same issue, introduced and discussed thoroughly during 2012 abbreviated session.
I'll look into this. Thanks.
Anyone else?
Richard, I want to flip the question that I asked Mr. Pills upside down, and or maybe it was the department. I think it was the department I asked whether. A reduction to 6 years would be an impediment that would make the program unworkable. So flip that upside down and toss the same question out to you. Is 10 years something that we simply can't live with?
Thank you, Chair Witt. Again, I would suggest that the primary issue here, not detracting from the underlying program, because the underlying program, I think, is a beneficial tool in terms of the management of the resource, in terms of greater flexibility. With that said, if one were to look at the leases entered into today, they have all, I think, predominantly been for a year and no longer than 2 years. I don't view it as an impediment, but if this program expands, particularly within a specific region, that's where I think you have the distinct potential for injury to other water right owners, and that is, I think, the primary concern.
Okay, thank you. Representative Reardon.
I'm not sure. I thought I understood what was going on. How would you talk about potential injury to other water right owners? Sounds like fairly new to this. We have a program where it requires water to be left in the stream on a lease. How does someone get injured on this program?
Chair Witt and Representative Reardon, if I understand your question correctly, where would the potential for injury arise?
Thank you for stating my question better than I did.
Let's take a specific stream reach, and your most senior user is at the uppermost point of that stream reach. And he or she is the most senior, exercising their right, and they exercise their full rate and duty. for an irrigation season. The more junior users downstream, their rights, in part, may be predicated on the return flow of the most senior. And you, all of a sudden, changed the use of the first right and protect it in stream. That excludes the more junior users downstream from potentially exercising the full rate and duty of their right that could indeed be predicated on the return flow of the first person. Mr. Chair, may I add?
Please do. This is a very technical. If it's your first time being exposed to it, it can be very difficult to understand. And Representative Whitsitt?
I would just like to ask Mr. Kosan, could you explain what a return flow is for this committee? Some people don't understand what that is.
Chair Witt and Representative Whitsitt, certainly. Return flow, you could irrigate a 168-acre parcel, and a portion of that water is not just taken out of stream and put on that parcel, but a portion of that water will always and traditionally return to the originating stream or the source of the water. But I think it's also important, Mr. Chair, to keep in mind the distinction between what a right might be on paper and what is traditionally used. You may hit a situation where the paper right is greater than what has traditionally been used. So if the paper right and the quantity of water under the paper right is transferred in stream, again, you have the potential for injury for junior users or other users downstream.
Representative Thompson.
I want to talk a little bit about those contracts. This is the first time I've heard the two-year contract mentioned. I think the bill limits it to a maximum of five. If in year five of a six-year sunset, or any sunset, and I sign a two-year contract, then that actually extends the sunset for the person of that contract another year, right?
Mr. Chair and Representative Thompson, that's an interesting question in terms of an existing contract.
If that's an interesting question, the follow-up then is in a 10-year sunset, if I sign a contract in year 9 for 5 years, the sunset runs for 14 years on that contract.
But it would have been reviewed.
Mr. Chair and Representative Thompson, from recall, we addressed that during some discussions on the Senate side, and I think language specifically contained, I believe, on the top of page 2, however, the total period for which a water right may be leased for split use as described in subsection 3 of this section may not exceed 10 years regardless of the number of leases or renewals of leases issued for the water right, and as well as provisions contained in section 5. And I don't know if that answers your question, but I think, if I recall, we discussed that on the Senate side.
So, if I'm hearing you correctly, now I'm getting confused. If we had a six-year sunset and you sign a five-year lease in year 5, mm-hmm. the sunset effectively runs for 10 years. Since there is no presumption, I will sign the lease in the first year of the 6-year or 10-year sunset.
Number of leases or renewals of leases.
Do we have anyone who has clarification on this item? Tom, thank you. I appreciate it.
Mr. Chair, for the record, Tom Paul, Water Resources Department. Mr. Kosasan referenced the negotiations of the subgroup on the Senate side. And with the talk of the 10-year sunset, the question that Representative Thompson raised was, what happens if in year 9 I do another lease for 5? and the group came up with the language that you see on the top of page 2 that limits the total maximum length under this bill to a 10-year period. So if we have a 10-year sunset and on year 9 somebody has been leasing for 9 consecutive years and they enter into another lease, according to what's written here, they would only have one more year available to them.
Follow up,
please.
But what if their first lease is in year 9? We're trying to expand this program. So if I'm not saying in the first contact or anything, but it would seem reasonable to me that if we're out selling this program, someone could, during that expansion, sign a 5-year contract in year 9, which runs the contract to year 14.
Mr. Chair, Representative Thompson,
the way
it is written, if somebody had not done a split season lease until year 9 and then they entered into a 5-year lease, their lease would run for 5 years.
To me, this is an issue that, first of all, as a policy, I don't like 10-year sunsets because you lose institutional memory and our replacements come back in 10 years wondering why the heck we ever had a sunset, and then Beth, who will still be here, has to dig through the records and try to find that, because there won't be any recollection anywhere of why that happened. So I think 10 years is too long for any sunset as a policy. But I'm particularly interested in water policy because it's so volatile. We don't know where we're going with water policy in the next 2, 3, 4, or 5 years, let alone 10 years. And your assertion of potential harm, I think there's all kinds of things that can happen, you know, because of our water situation statewide. And going out 15 years or 14 years in this system might, to me, seem problematic.
Mr. Chair, there's been, Representative Thompson, there's been discussion, Mr. Costasan raised it, regarding injury, and I know you've focused a lot on injury on this discussion. The bill, the way it's written, requires the department to do an injury review before we can approve a split season lease or any lease, for that matter. If the department finds injury, then we can't approve unless the lease is modified so that the injury doesn't occur. If we process, make an initial finding of no injury, process the lease request, and injury develops after the lease is approved, the bill also addresses that and says that the lease can be undone or additional conditions placed so that the injury does not occur. It sounds like there's an impression that that injury will occur unless the legislature takes further action. And I just wanted to assure you that's not the case, that if injury develops through the use of this, that it's addressed immediately.
Okay. Representative Unger.
Thank you for that explanation about injury. In the current leases that we have there been any reports of injury?
Mr. Chair, Representative Unger, no, there have not been any allegations of injury.
So in the 12 years that this program has been in place, we've never had any allegations of injury from this program?
Representative Unger, that's correct.
Chair, I think if the discussion is anything about a sunset, it should be whether or not we have a sunset at all. I mean, this is a program that's been in place for over a decade. It's worked. It's doing what it's supposed to do, and the allegations that there might be injury into the future in some future decade, if that arises, this bill even addresses those concerns. And so I think this is the process up to this point has served its purpose. And if 10 years is what the Senate agreed to and that's the reasonable compromise that they agreed to, then so be it. But if we're talking about changing that agreement, I think the change based on the information presented to us here really calls for us to lift the sunset altogether.
Thank you, Representative Unger. Representative Whitsitt.
So, Mr. Paul, do I understand that up till now we've had 1 to 2 year leases with 6-year sunset?
Mr. Chair, Representative Whitsitt, I can't tell you the exact length of the leases. The leases are allowed up to 5 years, and the split season may very well have been 1 to 2 years.
Okay. My follow-up question is, if this is working well, why are we changing it? Why don't we leave it at 1 to 2 or 1 to 5 year leases with the 6 year sunset? I'm not understanding what we are addressing if it's worked so well up till now.
Mr. Chair, Representative Whitsitt, the change, originally the bill that we proposed would have removed the sunset. It did incorporate a 5 year maximum term for a lease, and that had not been in statute before. So we're not changing the term of the lease. By rule, it's been 5 years. We're not changing that term. What was proposed was to eliminate the sunset. So I believe we're talking about sunset provision.
All right. And with that, I'm going to have to adjourn our hearing. And with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 199A for today. And I am going to announce that we will be carrying over our entire agenda until Tuesday. And with that, the committee is adjourned. Thank you very much.